From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde in for Ross Reynolds. The United States Senate is expected to vote to pass a comprehensive immigration reform bill tonight. And joining us with more on the politics of immigration reform and what it could mean for the U.S. economy is Matt Iglesias. He's Slate's business and economics correspondent, and he's also huge on Twitter. Matt Iglesias, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
What's your Twitter account?
It's Matt Iglesias,
all right.
M-A-T-T-Y-G-L-E-S-I-A-S.
All right, check it out. He's a very prolific tweeter. I want to talk about immigration reform and get into some of the details of this Senate bill in a minute. But you've also been writing about sort of the big picture when it comes to immigration reform and what impact that would have on wages, especially of people who are not immigrants, unskilled workers. What did you find?
Well, you know, it's a bit of a complicated research question because it's hard sometimes when you do these studies to distinguish between who are the native-born Americans and who are the people who simply arrived before the most recent immigrants. And so one thing you see very clearly is that the impact on the wages of other immigrants, of more immigrants coming in, is actually quite clearly negative. But it looks like the impact on the wages of native-born Americans, you know, people who were born here, people who've been here for a while, is broadly positive, even though some individual people do lose out.
Does that include folks at the bottom of the wage scale, essentially unskilled workers?
You know, it varies a little bit from study to study. There are some studies out there that show unskilled workers suffering when immigrants come in, but there's other studies that show unskilled workers benefiting. Part of the reason for the disagreement between the studies is that some of them look at prices, whereas others only look at wages. When you take a more sort of inclusive study and you say not just, well, what do people get paid, but also what happens to their cost of living, you tend to see a much more positive across-the-board impact. You know, you have more people and living standards go up. You know, if you think about it in the other direction, I think it gets a little bit clearer to most folks. If some kind of like massive plague swept across the country and 10% of the population died, that wouldn't put the United States on the road to prosperity, right? I mean, we have an interdependent economy. The absence of those kind of people would hurt most of us.
So the more people who are working, performing jobs, essentially, the more the economy grows, the better off we all are.
Yeah, broadly speaking, that's true. Now, of course, if you have a very targeted immigration, right, if we were to pass a law that says, well, lots and lots of dentists can come into the United States, but only dentists can come, that would drive down the wages of dentists in particular, right, because they have very highly specialized skills. But when you have a broad range of people with different kinds of skills coming in, and particularly, you know, the skills that immigrants have might be different from the skills that native workers have, even if they're all quote-unquote unskilled. For example, you know, native-born people, even people with low levels of education, generally speak English quite well, whereas immigrants don't. And so you might have, you know, immigrant maids working at the hotel and then native-born people working at the front desk and other places where you interact with customers. So that kind of broad immigration is broadly positive for Americans.
Matt Iglesias is Slate's business and economics correspondent. We're talking about immigration reform. Matt, what impact would this have on the deficit?
Well, the bill that is sitting there in the U.S. Senate is expected to broadly decrease the deficit. When that score came out showing that the deficit was going to go down, that immediately led senators to turn around and sponsor an amendment to drastically increase the amount of money spent on border security. So the sort of deficit fighting punch has been taken out a little bit in favor of doing even more spending on Border Patrol individuals. But the point of the Congressional Budget Office's analysis was that basically when more immigrants come in, they pay more in taxes than they receive in benefits, so the deficit falls.
Let's get into some of the key features of the Senate immigration reform proposal. It adds money for border agents and for fencing. How much and why did they decide to do that?
I mean, it adds tens of billions of dollars to this, you know, depending on the time horizon you're looking at. And, you know, the reason they decided to do it is largely politics. I mean, people want to see an immigration bill tackling the flow of unauthorized people. So the bill has a number of measures that do that, some of which, a lot of which, the most effective of which, actually look at employers, you know, and say, well, look, there's going to be penalties for you if you're knowingly hiring illegal workers. But they've also going to double the Border Patrol, which will be the third time in 20 years that we double its size. They're going to build more fences. They're going to apply more technology to the fence. And, you know, some of that, it reflects people's genuine anxieties. Some of it reflects the fact that, you know, there's business contracts in play. And that's sort of, it's very expensive. But in the whole, you know, the deficit goes down under this. So it's a compromise that Democrats are happy to make.
What difference would increased border security have, assuming it was effective for the economy?
Well, you know, increased border security is in some ways a misleading idea, because already about a third of the undocumented residents in the United States actually came in through visas. You know, they crossed the border legally. They then just didn't leave when they were supposed to. So this legislation is also going to increase the number of so-called guest workers who are able to come in on temporary work permits. And so the big concern that you should have about this bill, if you think too many people are going to sneak in, is that you're going to have people overstaying visas. And doing more on the border security doesn't really kind of help there. You know, the impact sort of on its own then becomes hard to judge, right? If you just divert people into other kinds of channels, you know, you've spent money and you haven't achieved very much. If you really sealed it off so you didn't have any people here working without permits, you'd have some negative economic impacts, but also some positive ones. Because when people are working without permission, it's difficult for them to have their legal rights in the workplace. And that can undermine conditions for everybody.
Matt Iglesias is Slate's business and economics correspondent. You mentioned that increased border security, if it worked, would lead to visa overstaying. What impact would visa overstaying have on the economy? More and more people.
Well, you know, I mean, again, it depends a little bit who comes in what numbers. The concern that people have, economically speaking, with people working here illegally is that, you know, if you don't have legal permission to live in the United States, then it's difficult for you to file any kind of grievances if you're being cheated out of money, cheated out of your overtime, not getting minimum wage you're entitled to. You can't participate in any kind of union organizing drive or other sort of work related actions. And so that has a kind of depressing effect on the economy. But it depends, you know, what's the hypothetical alternative to an illegal worker being in the United States? Is it giving him legal status? That's going to drive his wages up, generally drive the economy up. Or is it simply removing him from the country, which is going to tend to drive his living standards even further down and probably hurt the broader economy?
And you've also been covering the politics of this. What's going to happen?
Well, you know, it looks like it's going to pass the Senate. Republicans have been mollified by this sort of extra border security stuff. And a number of Republican senators, it's John McCain in particular, but also to an extent Marco Rubio, are really sort of passionate about this issue. Then you're going to kick over to the House of Representatives. It looks like if you just had a free vote on the House floor, sort of took this Senate bill and let each House member vote on it, there's a strong chance it would pass. But that's not how the House works. In order for a bill to get a vote, the Speaker of the House has to want it to get a vote. And the Speaker of the House is a Republican. Most of the members of his caucus don't like this bill very much, so it may not even come up to the floor.
Matt Iglesias, I also want to ask you about the farm bill, because that's something that you've also been covering, also been writing about. House Republicans rejected a farm bill last week, and I was looking, the Heritage Foundation actually calls this a major victory for fiscal responsibility and limited government. What do you think?
I mean, I think that's a little bit silly. I mean, what happened is that usually year after year, you get a sort of bipartisan vote on the farm bill. Republicans get farm subsidies that they like, and Democrats get food stamps that they like. What Republicans tried to do this year was say, no, we're going to really cut out food stamps. We're going to take a lot of money out of that program in order to preserve farm subsidies. So they wrote a bill like that. Naturally, Democrats don't want to vote for that kind of bill. And then the problem they wound up having is that a critical mass of Republicans didn't want to vote for it either. And they say, well, it doesn't cut food stamps enough. And so now their problem is, well, they can tweak it. They can make the bill even more conservative to pick up extra Republican votes, but then they're going to lose more votes in the center. And so you're seeing here just a kind of a tactical problem in the Republican caucus, where even though they all basically agree that what they want to do is take money away from poor families who are getting nutrition assistance, they can't decide on the exact number that they want to take out. And that's sort of stalling the process. If they ever get their act together, then we're going to have a negotiating process with the Senate that naturally is a much more moderate bill.
So eventually we could see a farm bill?
Well, you know, you assume we're going to see a farm bill sooner or later, because if one doesn't pass and there's no sort of extensions of the existing law, eventually we're supposed to revert to the old 1949 farm bill that was, you know, written in a very different time, would take out a lot of programs. I think farm interests would become very upset with it. A little bit ironically, food stamp program largely continues as is if they don't pass a new bill. So if Republicans object to cutting food stamps only a little, they're going to wind up not cutting it any. And that doesn't really make sense from a conservative viewpoint. So I'm not 100% sure what the Heritage Foundation is thinking in pushing this kind of line. I mean, they see it as a conservative victory, that they're sort of preaching the true faith. But it's likely to be very counterproductive to what they care about.
Matt Iglesias is Slate's business and economics correspondent. So what do you think the politics of the farm bill suggest for what's going to happen with immigration reform?
Well, you know, it shows a certain lack of tactical nimbleness on the part of the Republicans. You know, typically what you want to do, if bills are coming through the Senate that are more liberal than you want, what you want to do is pass another bill, a more conservative bill, that sort of addresses the same topic. But you know, you do pass something. What you saw with this farm bill is that the most far-right 50 to 60 members of the House caucus are very unwilling to compromise even a little bit, even for tactical or strategic advantage. And so that's going to make it difficult for Boehner to write some kind of Republican immigration bill and then pass it and say, oh, you know, we have a disagreement with the Democrats, but we all want to address immigration. Here's our plan. Here's their plan. We think our plan is better. Instead, you're going to get a situation where either he allows a vote on the Democratic bill, where it very well may pass, or else he's just going to pass nothing. And now he can do that. I mean, no one can really stop him if he wants to pass nothing. But it looks a little bit bad if you're just up there saying, you know, we don't have any legislation on this at all. So that's kind of the problem for Boehner, the hope for immigration reformers.
All right, Matt Iglesias, last thing I want to ask about, we've got a little bit of time, is Edward Snowden. Everybody knows him as the leaker who leaked information about the NSA spying on U.S. citizens in Russia, might be headed to Ecuador. And I'm wondering what the leader of Ecuador, that's Rafael Correa's, approach has been so far in dealing with the United States. Kind of, you know, why Ecuador?
Well, you know, the Ecuadorian government's relationship with the United States has been on a downhill trajectory, really, ever since President Correa came into office. He came in and he defaulted on Ecuador's external debt obligations, many of which were to American banking firms, things like that. And that sort of set off a downward spiral of you know, Washington disapproving of him and his government. He tried to build closer relationships with Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, with the sort of broader left-wing movements that exist down there in South America. And the Ecuadorian government has also given asylum, basically, to Julian Assange of WikiLeaks over in their embassy in London. So, you know, he has sort of been very eager to kind of take small shots at the United States government. You know, there's a perception in Latin America that the U.S. has been sort of too domineering in the Western Hemisphere. A lot of leftist politicians in Latin America like to take us down a peg or two. This is a cheap and easy way for them to do it. It's part of about 5-6 years now of U.S.-Ecuadorian kind of low-level conflict that's coming to a head.
All right. Matt Iglesias, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
He is Slate's business and economics correspondent. And from KUOW, I'm David Hyde.